The Web's Michael Smith. It's episode 66 of the Canes Cast. And you know what?
What's that?
You need to pass the gravy.
I will gladly pass the gravy to you, TV's Mike Maniscalco, here as we approach Thanksgiving. Not American Thanksgiving, just Thanksgiving. Sorry to all our Canadian friends and
listeners.
You have
to do that. We do have Canadian listeners, and Canadian Thanksgiving is a thing.
Well, Thanksgiving is what we celebrate down here in the States. And it's coming up this week.
Yes, it
is. On Thursday.
It's always on Thursday.
Sandwiched by two home games to wrap up the Hurricanes' six-game homestand.
Sandwiched.
See what
leftover
sandwiches. Yeah, exactly.
Is outstanding.
So we got Toronto coming to town in Florida on Friday. Toronto Wednesday. They're a pretty good team.
Yeah. Maybe way better than I thought they were going to be. And they also have one of their better players just hanging out in Sweden.
Yeah. And Austin Matthews, also one of their better players, working his way back from injury at the moment, probably wouldn't be ready for Wednesday, but
I think right now, and I'm sorry I haven't done my Leafs homework yet today as we're doing the Canes Cast, but I think he's still going to be out a couple of more games. But when you've got Patrick Marleau and John Tavares, I think you'll be okay.
Yeah. So the Hurricanes will have their hands full with that one. Then, of course, the Florida Panthers come to town on Friday to wrap up this season-long six-game homestand. We'll get to the games that happened over the weekend here in a few moments. But coming up on the show, we'll break down the last two games of the Hurricanes homestand. We'll look ahead to this upcoming week, Thanksgiving. We'll maybe get to some of your questions. We'll see if any of those roll in over the next 15 minutes or so. And we found two more copies of NHL 19 for Xbox One and PlayStation 4. We'll be giving those away later in the show, so stay tuned.
Where were you
hiding
those things?
I don't know. We
just stuffed the turkey with them?
We just moved some papers around, and there they were.
All right. Well,
they appeared.
Good.
It's an early Christmas miracle.
You know the best part about it, you don't have to do anything. The people who've already registered,
right,
entered.
We had a lot of entries last time, so we're just dipping back into that pot, pulling out two more names for our loyal listeners, and stay tuned to hopefully hear your name called for one of the lucky winners of NHL 19.
All right, so let's get to it. A couple of things that we need to talk about, some things to break down, some things to like, some things to not like. Let's go with, since last we talked, there have only been
two games. Yeah, because we last came to you on Tuesday as the Hurricanes went for a little team building at Fort Bragg. A weird four-day gap in the schedule. Wasn't the bye week or anything. That's coming up after the All-Star game. It was just one of those scheduling quirks that that happens on every team's schedule. Every team is going to go through a time like this where a prolonged stretch where they're not playing games, and the Hurricanes then had back-to-back games on the weekend. They practiced twice during that four days without any games. Had, of course, the day at Fort Bragg and then the day with Skate with the Canes. That was an off-ice workout day, a light day. And head coach Rod Brind'Amour believes that the way they structured that four days off will benefit them later in the season, that they were able to kind of give the guys a few days to mentally reset off the ice, put in two good practices on the ice on Wednesday and Friday. But I think in the short term, it probably hurt them when Columbus came to town on Saturday.
Well, it also hurts because you had that momentum of the big win, the emotional win against Chicago and Cam Ward, and now you've got a park it for 4 days. And look, I think that it's always when we ask the question, hey, is this going to be a good thing or a bad thing? You have to wait until the game is played to find out. But we've got to ask the question anyway. My belief is once you start playing, you want to stay in a rhythm.
Yeah.
And I don't understand for the life of me, I'm not going to go off on an NHL scheduling rant, or maybe I am. But the problem I have with this is you now have bye weeks. There's no reason in the middle of the season, at the start of the season, to have 4 days off for a hockey team. There's none. There's absolutely zero excuse the NHL and their schedule computer, HAL or Big Blue or whatever it is that does it, that can spit out some kind of schedule to me and say, well, this is why you got 4 days off here, and have it make sense. You could have played one game in between, or even better, how about you move Columbus to Friday night and then you have a Saturday off, and then you play on Sunday afternoon. and have spacing that way. I mean, there's, I think for me, there's always a way to bridge this, and I know that you've got to take into account 31 teams and there's an odd number of games. And I'm not trying to derail this, because if the Canes would have won on Saturday night, we'd be sitting here going, oh, the rest helped out. The rest helps for a few things, and I'm not going to just try to downplay all of it. But you're going to get closer to getting Victor Rask back from his hand injury.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Pesce is dealing with a lower body situation. This gives him time to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing for goaltender Peter Mrazek, mm-hmm. and anybody else who might have had some assorted bumps or bruises that they never tell us about, that we kind of have to piece together. And you notice maybe somebody's walking with a limp or somebody's showing up. Like we saw Sebastian Aho show up wearing a yellow jersey, meaning non-contact, for the practice win on
Wednesday
after the Fort Bragg visit. And so, you know, yeah, you can rest up a little bit, but players will tell you, once you get in a rhythm, you want to keep playing. Shane Willis told me that the other night, that the ideal situation is you have no more than 2 days off in between games.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the playoff structure of basically playing every other day. You practice maybe a handful of days in there, and that's what the Hurricanes had prior to that break. They had the game every other day, St. Louis, Chicago,
yep.
Detroit, Chicago, and they got on a little bit of a roll at 2-0-1 there, and then everything just kind of came to a halt.
Yeah, and again, the reason why I brought up the bye week in that little rant there is if you don't have a bye week, then find ways to give teams 3-4 days off in the season, because it is such a grind and it is such a physical, brutal stretch that these guys go through. But you have a bye week, you have a little bit of shutdown around Christmas, you have a little bit of shutdown around the All-Star game. There's plenty of room there to just keep playing till you get there. And I know that I'm trying to take the role of NHL and NHLPA for how to put a schedule together, but
And teams, too.
Yeah.
You know, teams and their
Oh, the building
availability.
I get all of this. Days that you want to play
right.
and days that you don't. And this is all understood. But for me, just the 4 days off just felt like it was coming at the wrong time for this team, because they were on that little dip, and then they were pulling out of it. And then that performance on Saturday, again, the captain said it, Justin Williams, was a dud. They weren't ready to play. They didn't have their legs. Columbus was, and if you just, you know, do figure eights for a game, you're going to get beat. Now, here's a news flash, folks. For 82 games, you're going to have duds.
Yeah.
You're going to have a bad performance here or there.
Right.
That was just a wrong time for the Canes to put one on the ice here at PNC Arena.
Yeah, you're going to have those games where your game just isn't there for whatever reason,
yep.
and that's exactly what it was on Saturday night. But the important part for the Hurricanes was then, how do you respond to something like that? Because those games are going to happen, but you can't let it go on for a prolonged period of time, and you have to come back. Luckily for the Hurricanes, it was less than 24 hours later, come back the next night and respond, and the Hurricanes were able to do just that. So, you know, we can go back to Saturday night for a second and just sort of break down what exactly happened. But it was a first-place team, the Columbus Blue Jackets, first place in the Metropolitan Division currently, coming in and just outplaying, overmatching the Hurricanes, basically in all areas of the ice. The Hurricanes, you know, never really got their legs under them.
Nope.
They never really played the game that we've come to expect them to play under head coach Rod Brind'Amour. And that was that. And once they got behind and had to chase the game, even at home, against a good team with an all-star goalie in net, it's tough to work out of that hole. And you saw the Hurricanes sniff a little bit of life there in the second period with Sebastian Aho's wraparound goal to slice that deficit in half. But once Columbus was able to get that goal right back, essentially, and then build from there, that was pretty much it. And that's just one of those games, I think, where you take what happened. It might not have been it wasn't a great game. It was probably the Hurricanes' worst effort of the season. You just take that, you flush it, you throw that game tape away, and you move on. And that's exactly what the Hurricanes were able to do, because now the benefit of the schedule is they come back the very next night and play another divisional opponent, another chance for them to right the wrong of Saturday night.
Yeah, and that was the best part, by the way, of that's the silly part. You had 4 days off, but then you're going to play back-to-back
right.
Saturday, Sunday. But it was actually a good thing, because the Canes could erase Saturday. And we could kick that Saturday game around more. The best way to say it, nobody was ready for that game.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. And that was it. But they flushed it. And you know what I like? 30 seconds into the game against New Jersey, the Canes sent a statement. It's going to be different tonight. Justin Williams get a goal 22 seconds in. Michael Ferland gets his 10th of the year, 8 seconds after that. And it was going to be one of these things. Hey, Katie, bar the door. This could be like a 10-2 hockey game.
That's, yeah, as soon as that happened and then New Jersey scored about 6 minutes later, I was like, okay, it's going to be one of those nights.
Yep, and then it turned into...
And then there was nothing else after that.
A grind fest 2018. Yeah. But it was good. I think it was good for the Canes to win a game like that, to come out, serve notice, especially have a response after the way they played Saturday night, and then grind one out. And they did. And good for Curtis McElhaney, who's had one start in the past 20 days, and he came up and he made the saves he was supposed to. I know that sounds, well, no kidding, Mike, but he made the saves he was supposed to. And in the course of a game like that, that's what you're asking the goalie to do.
Yeah.
And good for him. And here we are on Monday recording this. I think that he earned the chance to play against his former team on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I don't think that would be a bad idea. I even wonder if the coaching staff gave any thought to playing him against Columbus on Saturday, just because the outing he had there earlier in the season. But I do understand from their standpoint, too, is you're going with Scott Darling, who is who you want to be your number one goaltender. You want to give him the chance, especially after beating Chicago twice in a span of 5 days. You want to give him that chance to start stringing some real solid starts together. Unfortunately for him, of course, he was not able to do that. Still hasn't won consecutive starts as a member of the Hurricanes. But Curtis McElhaney coming in against the Devils, a team that he has had real good success against. I think he's got now like a 940 save percentage.
Which he said he didn't even know that going
right,
into the game.
He didn't even remember. But good for him to come in and make, 33 saves on 34 shots. And I don't think face too many grade A opportunities. I think the Hurricanes limited those chances, especially in the third period down the stretch when New Jersey was expectedly, pushing and trying to get that game-tying goal. The Hurricanes were able to basically just shut it down. But McElhaney making the saves that he had to make, a bit of a concern earlier in the first period when that one got behind him. He reached back sort of awkwardly to cover it up, got the whistle, and then was just a little slow to get up. Had a little chat with Doug Bennett on the bench, the head athletic trainer, during the break, but seemed fine. Finished the game, obviously, just fine. And now, as you said, I think made a case to get the start in net on Wednesday against his former team, one of his former teams.
All right, well, let's get the other thing about the goaltending out there. I don't think that the coaching staff had a choice but to start Scott Darling on Saturday night.
Right.
I would have, because you've got to get him rolling. And I think the frustrating thing, and Scott Darling tells us this, he knows what kind of goalie he can be. We've all seen it. We know what's there. It's just the whole matter of doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
So especially that performance, the way that they get the win against the Chicago Blackhawks, and you're thinking, okay, here we go. But you can't turn the corner until you turn it. It's
right.
To use, in I guess, paraphrase a good adage from a very good friend of mine who was a coach, you can't do it until you do it. So that's the one of the cases for Scott Darling. This organization needs to get him going.
Mm-hmm.
And there's absolutely, in my mind, nothing wrong with giving him the opportunities to keep trying to be the man. But you also got to win points. You got to get your 2 points when you can at home, this homestand that now only has 2 games left. And if you're the Carolina Hurricanes, well, you got to find a way to get more points than what you have. But you got 5 out of, a possible 8 that have been on the table right now, because you have the loss in overtime to Detroit. You then get a big win that was needed against Chicago, the loss against Columbus, and then the win the other night against New Jersey. So you got 5 points out of a possible 8. You got to find a way. 9 would be spectacular out of 12 and definitely needed, but if you can get 3 more points, get 8 out of 12, that's above NHL 500 on the homestand. But I also think that you got to give, and what the coaching staff said at the beginning of the year, what Rod Brindamore said, you reward performance. You give Curtis McElhaney the net against Toronto because he didn't have to make spectacular saves, Michael, But I don't care if he faced 50 shots and they were all from center ice. If you stop them all, you get the net again, because that's what you're supposed to do.
And he's won 4 out of his 6 starts with the team. I mean, he's come in and provided, I think, really above and beyond what they could have asked him when they claimed him in early October. And a good thing they held on to 3 goaltenders, because now they've needed it with Mrazek out.
You know, I get the access of having John Forslund and Tripp Tracy's call in my ear during the game, being part of the telecast and now simulcast as well.
Yes.
And Tripp mentioned something about Curtis McElhaney's game, is he's very calm in the net, meaning he doesn't put himself in bad positions. He doesn't overskate his posts or where he's supposed to be. And, you know, sometimes that's a big part of goaltending. We love the athletic saves. You know, my all-time favorite goaltender is Dominik Hasek, and he was the guy who was like, you know, a fish flopping around on the ice doing whatever to make a save. But being technically sound, being mechanically sound, something to that for a team. And I think that we saw that out of Curtis McElhaney yesterday against New Jersey, and we'll see if he's got a little something up his sleeve against his former team.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. But
if they go that route, which we think they will.
He sort of sidestepped the question last night, and Rod Brind'Amour did as well. But I think based on his performance on Sunday, based on the fact that he's going to have an inkling of, certain guys on this team, I think you maybe throw him out there on Wednesday and see what happens.
All right. So if we do take a look at what this team is doing and some of the things that they're doing right, Michael, I don't know if you've noticed, but the power play has started to be a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Power play that was dead last for about the first 3 weeks of the NHL season found its way middle of the stretch that we're in right now to 16th overall, just in its performance. Not that the numbers have moved up. If you picked up their performance from, I think it was October 26th to like November 4th, 5th, somewhere around there. And then from there to where they are now, it's a top 10 power play unit in the last 2.5 weeks with the goals that they've scored. Now, you still got a long way to go to climb out of that hole, but what are you seeing different on the power play? Confidence, getting the puck to the net, getting traffic?
Yes.
That's all right.
Yes,
good.
All of those things.
Glad that I could make this a simple question.
I think what you're seeing too is maybe just a better selection of shots, maybe a smidge more patience, just in making the right pass or taking the right shot. I didn't think it was great last night against New Jersey, and obviously nothing was really good about that game against Columbus. But prior to that, when the Hurricanes had scored a power play goal in, 4 straight games?
Yep.
They were doing the right things. I think the units have been balanced a little better in terms of what each player brings to the ice. I think Lucas Wallmark has been somewhat of a nice surprise on the power play, just in terms of his ability to make a smart pass or take a smart shot. And you're starting to see the puck go in the back of the net for some of these defensemen, like Jacob Slavin, sneaking in from the point, or Dougie Hamilton or Justin Falk. The personnel is there, and we knew that. The personnel was going to have success, but it was a matter of execution. And I think that execution is starting to turn around. Much like the execution, I think, is beginning to turn around on the penalty kill. I think both specialty teams earlier in the season were not great, and they've both started to be better. So now I'll turn it to you and ask, what have you seen on the penalty kill that the team has been able to turn into positive results?
They're getting the bounces. I know that sounds so odd and a little bit homerish to say, but at the start of the year, there were just some fluky things happening, some bad bounces, some bad breaks, and they were going in the back of the net. And those things are happening less and less. One of the things that I am seeing is the chemistry of the group, most notably, when you look at Jordan Martinook and Warren Fogle up top, they do a really good job of pressuring the points. That's been, I think, one of the biggest keys for me, that they've done a good job of getting back to what they've done for years, getting sticks and passing lanes, pressuring the points, and also, and Rod Brind'Amour said this about everything, they've done a better job at standing up at the blue line and denying access on the power play,
right,
making it harder to gain the zone. So a combination of they've been so much tougher to gain the zone against the last few weeks, and they're getting a couple of breaks. You know, when a puck is sitting on somebody's stick and it might be rolling, they're getting it out instead of it rolling up the stick and going out into the slot and or then, having something weird happen.
And then forcing the issue once, if a team does gain the zone, forcing the issue, making them make a quick decision that then ends up as a turnover or a bad shot. And that's what was happening to the Canes, I think, on the power play, too, is when they were getting pressured, they were making poor decisions.
I'll sum it up for you. You know, they were panicking with the puck.
Right.
They were putting the puck in places where it wasn't supposed to go, and they were also squeezing the stick a little bit because they knew the puck wasn't going in the back of the net with a man advantage. And when you've got a team that has that self-doubt when, you know, things aren't working right, you can pressure them into mistakes. The Canes, it's so funny. I don't think the penalty killers were making mistakes. I think it was just weird things were happening. I keep going back to that, but there were so many penalty kills where I'm like, man, the other team doesn't even have a shot on goal yet, and then a missed clearing attempt, bing bang, it's in the back of the net.
Right.
By the way, I know Arizona are the absolute aces of shorthanded goals this year.
Apparently so.
Jordan Martinook only has one shorthanded goal this year, but he could easily have three or four.
And that's the Hurricanes' only shorthanded goal this year.
Yeah. So, but I like the penalty kill. I honestly think that some of the bounces have gone their way, but if we're going to get technical and people tune in for some of the technical things here that we can bring, being able to watch and being able to be around it, I think they've just done a much better job of denying entry into the zone, and I think that they've done a great job pressuring pucks on the points when they get the opportunity to do it.
And that was big in the second period last night when they faced all three of their penalty kills, and one of them lasted, I think, all of about 10 seconds.
Yeah, before a penalty was taken by New Jersey.
And so the Hurricanes were able to maintain that 2-1 lead, obviously, through the second period and through the third period all the way to the end of regulation to get that big divisional 2 points and a 4-point swing when you factor in the divisional opponent. So specialty teams coming around for the Hurricanes and the penalty kill factoring in big for them last night.
And the other important thing, New Jersey has been brutal on the road this year. I think they're now 2-8 on the road after that loss. You keep a team behind you in the standings.
Right, and you take care of business at home, and that's what has to happen. We talked about the importance of this 6-game homestand, and especially after the dud to Columbus, you wanted to see the team respond, and you wanted to see the team get back on track with then two additional games coming this week, one against one of the NHL's top teams in the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Speaking of standings, by the way, Hurricanes just 5 points out of first place, which, you know, that's a significant number. That's 3 games with the same amount of games played with Columbus. And I hate doing the let's look at the standings. I mean, we're not even at Thanksgiving yet. American Thanksgiving, Michael Smith. Sorry, but I grew up near Canada, so I'll give them a little bit of respect. That being said, the Canes are exactly 1 point out of second place.
Right.
So
it's very congested right now because no team.
Ooh, good word with allergy and cold and flu season.
Yes. No team has really separated themselves just yet. I mean, Pittsburgh being 7-8-3 after they were in first place, what, a couple of weeks ago? I mean, the 2-7-1 in their last 10 obviously doesn't help. The Rangers have been surging in their last 10. It's just
it's like how nonchalant you are about
that
you
doesn't
know,
help.
Well, they've got a winning percentage of just barely 20 in their last 10.
Suboptimal. Yeah. No team has really taken a hold of it. You could make an argument that Columbus has, especially in the last couple of weeks or so, and they're certainly a talented team that's deep across the board. But it's still a wide open division. It's still very wide open, and you look across the league, and that's the case in a lot of these divisions. The Pacific's a very interesting one because you have negative goal differentials almost across the board, but again, you're separated from first and seventh by 6 points. So it's early in the season, and that's what happens early in the season until teams are able to really create some separation between themselves. But the Hurricanes, as we approach Thanksgiving this Thursday, are not in a bad position right now.
Buckle up.
But they could be in a better position.
Absolutely. But it's going to be.
That's what it comes down to.
With 62 games left, I think the playoff race in both the Eastern and Western Conference is going to come down to game six, going to come down to game 82. Mm. It's going to take all 62 games to determine who's a playoff team and who's not. I don't think we're going to have, outside of maybe Tampa Bay and Nashville having stuff locked up, I think we're going to have divisional spots, Michael, coming down to the last week of the season.
And the Hurricanes are going to play, you look at the last week or two of the season, they've got Washington.
I know where they finished.
Washington, Philadelphia, Toronto, New Jersey, Philadelphia. With the exception of Toronto, that's all Metropolitan Division opponents.
But Toronto's an Eastern Conference opponent.
Exactly. And then you got Montreal before that, so another Eastern Conference opponent. It's that last 2 weeks of the season could be vitally important, especially if you're jockeying with some of those divisional teams for playoff positioning.
Can you imagine the viewership for the Mikey Awards this year in Philadelphia?
Unmatched.
A playoff spot on the line.
Unmatched.
I mean,
I can't wait.
We're going to be right up there with the Teens' Choice Awards.
Or the People's Choice Awards.
Absolutely.
Who votes on that?
Or Nickelodeon.
The People, I suppose.
What's the Nickelodeon one? Is that the Kids' Choice?
Yeah, the Kids' Choice Awards, where they get slimed and stuff.
And also, like, anybody who makes the mugs for World's Greatest Grandpa.
Mm.
We're going to be right there with all of them. So where we're set. We got a question for us.
Okay.
That came through. Bit of a rush order here today on the Gainescast, but Michael Butler's come through with, what has impressed you the most about the young, up-and-coming Canes players in Raleigh and Charlotte, if you follow them as well?
Well, Charlotte's been on an absolute tear. And what Mike Vellucci has that team doing down there, which is a very talented team too, has been very impressive. The comeback win the other night, I believe they won 6-5 after being down 4-1, if that's correct. Came back to win it in overtime, I believe, 6-5. So they're very impressed with what Charlotte's been able to do to begin. Alex Nedeljkovic has been good in net. I think he got pulled in that game and replaced by Callum Booth. But you look at his total body of work over this season, and he's been solid. And the team's gotten contributions from guys like Andrew Podorowski and Jani Kuokkanen. And Martin Natchez, a guy who we haven't really talked about here in a while, but he's gone down. I think took him a few games to really understand what was expected of him.
Yep.
But since then, he's been producing on a regular basis. And that's not really what the Hurricanes are looking for him to do down there. But the fact that he's learning the professional game and also seeing the results on the score sheet is going to benefit him greatly.
I only want to disagree with you because I think this organization – would love to see him produce while he learns how to play.
Right, right, right.
So,
but it's not the ultimate goal. They're not sending him down and saying score X amount of points.
Yeah.
There.
There's no this is your goal.
Right.
The goal is to see him learn how to play the 200-foot game in North America, a little bit more physical. And if he can learn how to do that and put up points, that's great. For me, every time I look down and see, you know, Jani Kuokkanen putting up points again, that's impressive. And the goaltending. You know, Alex Nedeljkovic getting the wins. Callum Booth, he hasn't had that many opportunities to play, but when he has, he's been all right. That's what I've noticed in Charlotte. What's impressed me the most about the young players here with Carolina, up with the NHL club, their poise.
Mm-hmm.
To see the poise in Clark Bishop, in Warren Fogle, guys who this is really – for Fogle, we got a taste of what he could do last year for a little bit, but to see him – accept roles, get moved on a couple of lines, and continue to be a good penalty killer and blossom into a good NHL player and how he handles everything in stride. That's one. Clark Bishop, the exact same way when we're talking about guys who have been called up. And then on the other side, can I give a little bit of credit to Hayden Fleury and Phil DiGiuseppe, who were sent down to Charlotte. And these are guys who last year spent, I'm pretty sure, Michael, the entirety of the season with the Carolina Hurricanes, most of it.
DiGiuseppe might have missed the first month or so.
But, I mean, you know what I'm saying. Like, it's one of those things where you expect to be with this team the whole year. They got sent down, and they didn't pout. There was no what's wrong. There was no demands through agents or whatever. They went down, handled the assignment, got called back up, and got ready to play. Now, in Hayden Fleury's case, for going down, head coach Rod Brind'Amour made it abundantly clear. We need him to play, and if he's sitting in the press box for 2 weeks, he's not going to be ready to play. You can only practice and simulate so much, so you get that. But he goes down, comes back up. Phil DiGiuseppe goes down, comes back up, starts scoring goals. All of a sudden, the Canes have a fourth line that you can roll over the boards and give them 12, 10 minutes a night. if you want to do that. That's centered by Clark Bishop with Warren Fogle. And if you want Phil DiGiuseppe, you can move him up or down based on the offense that he's had out there. So that's what I've been most impressed with.
Yeah, yeah. It's an incredibly young team. And for seeing those guys come in and play such large roles, seeing how Andrei Svechnikov has really, I think, settled in and is starting to grasp just how good he can be in this league, even though he's still just 18 years old, understanding that, you know, you can do some things that you might not have thought you were going to be able to do, both with the puck and physically. I think he's really starting to figure things out and round into form as a solid player, and he's only going to get better as the season moves along, as he continues to play. I really like what he's done so far. It's a young team, and these young guys have stepped in and handled themselves very well. And now the challenge, I think, especially for a guy like Svechnikov, is going to be to maintain that over the course of the 82-game season. And you're already starting to see it with Fogle a little bit, who I don't think has had – I don't think he's recorded a point in about a month's time. He's doing some good things, but he's not seeing the results, and the challenge is to continue playing the way he is playing, especially on the penalty kill, as you mentioned, and then hopefully seeing the results follow. So good things so far. I would and this is just me thinking out loud. What would you think about Martin Hachas coming back up in the next, I don't know, month or so, and maybe playing the wing?
I'd be for it.
Yeah. It worked with Sebastian Aho for a couple of years to ease him into this game, not give him those difficult responsibilities of playing center, which I think so far this year he's handled extremely well. Letting HS sort of figure it out while playing on the wing.
I would like it, because if we were going to do a list of, you know, what are the Canes' strengths, what are their weaknesses, areas of improvement, they need a little bit more dynamic.
Finish.
Yeah. Finish. Yeah. I was looking for.
But he's checks. So.
Well, hey, man, let's not put labels on people.
That's true.
Okay. But they need a little bit more dynamic playmaking ability.
Mm.
And I think that Martin Natchez can provide that. So I wouldn't be against it, bringing him up on the wing and seeing what he can do.
Yeah.
I thought that we were going to maybe get a look if the power play continued to, you know, be stalled out a little bit, that we would see him come up. But no, I have no problem with it. That almost could have been.
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
It could have been, but I have one.
What?
And by have one, I mean a fan sent one.
Oh, my goodness. But you but actually had one.
Yeah, that's true. It just was sort of a discussion point that came up.
All right, but all due respect to Mr. Farrell, who already said that. Do you want to see him up on the wing, or
yes. Is
it center Absolutely. All the way for him?
No, I would love to see what he could do on the wing. I know he's a natural center. We know he's going to be a center in this league,
yep. But
I see no problem in letting him play wing and seeing how his game could grow in this league while he doesn't have the pressures of everything that is required of a center.
Right.
I think it worked just fine with Aho, and you started to ease him into the center position late last season, really throw him headfirst into it this season. But yeah, until he figures it out, and the Hurricanes aren't going to need, you know, once Victor Rask gets back into the lineup in the next, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks, you're going to be somewhat covered in the center position in terms of depth. So you can experiment and you can try things. What Martin Hachas on a wing with Victor Rask as center, I would like to see that.
All right. Well,
that's intriguing to me.
It is. I think it would be something very good to see and could lead to some very good things for the Carolina Hurricanes. Now that that's out of the way, you actually have one.
Yes.
Let's get to it. You've bookmarked it. You've learned from your errors.
Thank you, Josh Holdner, at Josh _ Holdner 98 on Twitter. On the note of contracts, do you think the Canes will re-sign the newly acquired guys, Ferland, Hamilton, Martinook, or will one or more be gone next season? Well, Dougie Hamilton is under contract for the next couple of years, so there's no need to worry about that. But more immediately, Michael Ferland is scheduled to become a UFA this offseason. And Jordan Martinook will also hit unrestricted free agency. So there are two guys and a number of other forwards as well. Justin Williams is going to be an unrestricted free agent. Sebastian Aho, Phil DiGiuseppe, Brock McGinn, Teuvo Teravainen, and Hayden Fleury, all due to be restricted free agents. And then, of course, Curtis McElhinney, Peter Mrazek, and Goal, unrestricted free agents at the season's end. So a lot of new faces on that list, some very important faces to this team on that list. I do think of the three you mentioned and of the two eligible for new contracts with the team, Frillin and Martinook, I would love to see both return. I would love to see both return. I think Martinook is an easy re-sign in the fact that he's exactly the type of depth player you want. We've seen him contribute offensively. We've seen what he can do on the penalty kill, and he's got a great personality and is good for the room.
Absolutely. I think that Jordan Martinook is one of those guys that you have to have on your team if you're going to win because of the intangibles that he brings. And, oh, by the way, he is a hell of a good penalty killer. And that's been a really good line. I just wish they would bury more opportunities. That Lucas Walmark, Jordan Martinook, and Andrei Svechnikov line, and I know that people have been, and we've already chronicled that on CanesCast, want to see a little bit more out of Andrei Svechnikov, maybe bumped up with a couple of different players. But that line has gotten chances. They just have to finish.
Yeah.
And if they get to that, man, this team could be really dangerous to play in the next 20-25 game segment that we're taking a look at. I think both players are integral to the future of the Canes because Michael Ferlin brings an element to this team that they've been lacking forever. And when I say forever, pretty much since, you know, a guy like Eric Cole was no longer part of the organization. He is just one of those gritty, hard, sandpaper forwards to play against who provides a really, really big presence on a line. And you see it for Sebastian Aho and Teuvo Teravainen.
And he scored a team-leading 10 goals.
10 goals, double digits already in 20 games. He was actually my keep it. So I guess it kind of goes hand in glove.
Okay.
Michael Ferlin scores more than 30 goals this year. So,
well, he's on pace for what, 40?
40 right now.
Yeah, I think it's possible that he's a 30-goal scorer. He's
not asking if it's possible. I'm asking, are you taking it?
I'll take it.
He scores more than 30 this year.
I'll take it, which is good news for him.
Great news
for him. Because he is going to get paid this summer. I think he does it. I'll take it.
All right. I put that out there, but, yeah, I think he does. I mean, with that line, with what he's done and what he's been able to do on the power play as well, you know, good hands, gets in front of the net.
Yeah, he can finish. He's one of the guys on the team who can finish those high danger opportunities, and he's done just that so far. He's reaping the benefits of playing with two of these dynamic forwards, but he's also the one to open up space for those two guys to work their magic, and for him then to reap the rewards of that. So it's sort of a symbiotic relationship between the three.
Man, you keep cracking out all these big words.
So I think you
did. You get like a thesaurus?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I think you have to re-sign him.
All right.
But we'll see what happens. I mean, his price
goes up with every goal.
Just as Sebastian Aho's does as well.
Exactly. And I know that back to Josh's question, he didn't ask about Sebastian Aho, but that is a player that I would want to get locked up sooner rather than later if you're the Carolina Hurricanes. But there's a lot of folks love to tell you that the sports world is very simple and black and white and cookie cutter. It's not. There are so many factors today now, variables, what other teams do with players that impacts players on your team and contracts, from simple things, from term, how many years does a player get, to, of course, the dollars that come in, and, of course, all of the other factors in between. Where are you? Where do you live? What's the players around you? What's the front office situation? What's the coach situation? There's just not one, here's a blanket contract for everybody who's this age who scores this amount of points. Wish there was. Be easier, but it doesn't exist that way. And that's where it is. And with Michael Ferlin, I said about Martinook, I'll say it about Michael Ferlin too. He's a guy you have to have if you're going to be a winning hockey team, if you're going to be a playoff team. Got to have a guy like that on your roster.
Yep.
Another guy you have to have, I think we're done with the like it, keep it.
Okay.
Let me just keep it there. But I want to put this on everybody's radar. The next goal that Justin Williams scores for the Carolina Hurricanes will be his 100th as a member of this team. The Web's Michael Smith, as this is episode 66 of the Canes Cast. He will be joining some elite company if he does that. He will be only the ninth player in NHL history to score 100 career goals with multiple franchises and get a Stanley Cup with multiple franchises while doing that. The list that he is on that would include the name Justin Williams. Some of the names you might not know, some of the names you should know. Paul Coffey, former Carolina Hurricane, yes, but he had 100 with Edmonton and Pittsburgh and Stanley Cup titles there. Claude Lemieux, who was Mr. Playoff Performer, and of course, if you remember, Dino Cicerelli can't believe he shook that guy's hand, but with the New Jersey Devils and Colorado Avalanche. Mark Messier, who I don't care if Mark Messier came out of retirement today. He's one of those guys where if you signed Mark Messier in the offseason, he becomes your captain. I don't care if you've coached him, played with him or not. Edmonton and the New York Rangers. I think that's rather key right there. Joe Mullen and Joe Nieuwendyk. Joe Mullen with Calgary and Pittsburgh. Joe Nieuwendyk with Calgary and Dallas. Of course, Joe Nieuwendyk at one time was an advisor to the Canes organization. Stephane Richer with Montreal and New Jersey. And then going back in time, Red Kelly with Detroit and Toronto. And Frank Mihalovic, one of the strongest men in the National Hockey League, with Toronto and Montreal to do that. Justin Williams, I mean, that is elite company that you get into if he gets one more goal, which he will with the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah.
So just wanted to put that out there for people who are paying attention. And by the way, how about the captain? And good for the captain to go out and lead by example.
Right.
After that game Saturday, to be the guy 22 seconds in on Sunday to do what you need to do to get your team ready to win.
It's a nice pass by Staal, too, at the blue line to sort of curl it onto a stick. A nice play by Williams to avoid the stick check. He, you know, kept his stick in the air until the final moment, really, where he was able to find some daylight there in Corey Schneider's five hole. Corey Schneider, by the way, really struggling. Really struggling. And the Hurricanes were able to take advantage of that.
He is 0-14-2 in his last 16 starts.
Yes.
Zero wins. Just point that out.
Yeah. And his goals against average is sky high, and his save percentage is not great either. And the Hurricanes, you know, for whatever reason, you talk about starting the game on time. The New Jersey Devils did not start the game on time, and they paid for it last night. And the Hurricanes took advantage of it. And that's what Rod Brind'Amour was saying in his post-game speech that the video's on the website if you haven't seen it already. But you talk about taking breaths, and New Jersey took two of them two shifts and found themselves in a 2-0 hole.
Cannot take breaths in this league anymore.
Another question. This came in, actually, as a tweet mail question last week, but included you. So I wanted to bring it to Canes Cast since we do this podcast together. Jared Chaffetz, who we met at the San Jose In-N-Out last year with his father, Mike.
I do recall.
So shout out to Jared and his dad, Mike.
And his dad, Mike.
Hope you guys are doing well. And maybe we'll see you at an In-N-Out sometime in the near future.
His dad, Mike's a good man. Still in contact with him.
If you could pick one Thanksgiving food that you had to eat every day for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
Now, I get the questions pretty straightforward. Does gravy get involved? Like, can I still use gravy on top? Like, or is gravy the food item? You get what I'm driving at here?
I think we'll allow it.
Okay.
We'll allow it because take macaroni and cheese, for example.
Yes.
What if you top it with a little breadcrumbs or something? Like, I think we have to include bacon.
You know, do you put other things in the mac and cheese? Mm-hmm. By the way, let's say goodbye to Carolina Hurricane strength and conditioning coach Bill Berniston. Thanks for listening, Bill. We hope you've enjoyed episode 66.
And we hope you enjoy your Thanksgiving meal.
Exactly. Happy Thanksgiving to Bill. That being said, I love mashed potatoes, but mashed potatoes kind of become a treat. Turkey is always the obvious answer to go here, and I do enjoy me some turkey. Mm. I know a lot of people don't. I love turkey.
Yeah, I'm more of a ham guy.
No, I'm a turkey guy. I could have a turkey sandwich every day and be absolutely fine with it, but I'm going off the board.
Okay.
Maybe, I guess. I don't know what you call it. I call it stuffing.
Okay.
I could have stuffing with turkey gravy every single day.
For the rest of your life.
Every day. Could do it. Not even batting an eyelash. My mom's in particular. I don't know. My mom doesn't do anything fancy. It's not like she, you know, buys or bakes the bread and then dries it out and then all this. Nope. Just uses stovetop and throws in some like breakfast sausage in it and some mushrooms and that's it. And it's delicious.
I think one of the
You're
keys...
lost with the mushrooms. I know you don't like mushrooms.
Yeah. No. No. They're bad.
Mushrooms are delicious.
I look forward to your tweets.
We'll have the crowd split on that one. All right, so what's yours? If you say cranberry sauce, I'm going to have
no,
to thank
no, God,
good.
No. I think it's important to consider the versatility of a food item in this question because you do have to eat it
every day
for the rest of your life. So I think being that I am a ham guy, I will say ham because I think it's very versatile.
Nobody says, let's gather around the table for the Thanksgiving ham. I'm that might be a Webb's
But it is a traditional Thanksgiving food.
Ham?
Yes.
Turkey is.
Turkey is.
Ham's
but I
like the accoutrement. Ham's like, oh, we're having ham and turkey? We got like 30 people coming over.
It's
then.
A part of the Thanksgiving. It is a part of any traditional Thanksgiving spread.
See, I associate ham either with Easter or Christmas.
We will have our company Thanksgiving lunch tomorrow, and I guarantee there will be ham on the buffet. And that qualifies it as a Thanksgiving food, and then thus...
Oh, this is... Why do you always sidestep these things?
No, I don't think it's sidestepping at all.
But
it's a Thanksgiving food.
Every time you see a picture of a Thanksgiving table, I don't see a ham on it.
I don't know. What pictures are you looking at?
I'm just going to... You know what I'm going to do? I'm
going to
do a Google Thanksgiving dinner search right now here. This is happening.
Here's the other tricky thing is... Yeah... Say Thanksgiving food, what makes a food uniquely Thanksgiving?
That you don't have it all the time. Like, you don't have, people aren't roasting a turkey on a Wednesday. But
well,
people
might.
Do have, but people will have a ham. What are we having for dinner tonight? Ham. Oh, all
right,
okay.
Right.
That's kind of, like, that's to me is what makes it a little bit special.
Well, I think that's the only, then you're limiting yourself to just turkey.
Well, that's why I said,
and
what's
and
the
stuffing?
Thanksgiving food that I could have? No, there's others. There's sweet potatoes, however you want them.
I think that's more common than just Thanksgiving.
Well, they've become more common now, but like, you know, sweet potato casserole, stuff like that. Turnips. I'm a big turnip guy. Not everybody eats turnips all the time. So.
No. Every day for the rest of your life would be tough.
That's why I'm not picking that.
Yeah.
I do enjoy turnips, but not every day for the rest of my life. All right. Here we go. Michael, quick Google.
I'm going to be exonerated on this one.
No. Quick Google image search. Kind of like a Where's Waldo. You let me know where the ham is in any of those.
There's a lot of turkey.
I Googled Thanksgiving dinner. That's what I Googled. I'm not saying that ham doesn't show up.
Dude, it's not in any of these pictures that I can see.
Thank you. I grew up in an Italian household. When I went to my grandmother's house, Thanksgiving was insanity because you started off with the soup and the salad course, which could have fed everybody for a week. Then came the pasta course because you had to have that. So I could have sat there and go, oh, lasagna, because that's what I grew up with. But that's not exactly a Thanksgiving tradition. And then out came the turkey, roast beef, and ham. That was my family. And you know how many people were coming to dinner? 12. So.
Oh, there's ham. Found ham.
Yeah. How far did you have to scroll?
Not too far.
I'm just saying, I think that you ducked this.
Well, I'm not picking turkey because I'm not a huge turkey guy.
Fine. Green bean casserole?
I would, sure.
That's a good one. And again, I like turkey. I could have a turkey sandwich every day
or
some kind of turkey.
If we go the dessert route, maybe an apple pie.
That's,
but I again, I think you could probably
could you have
argue,
a slice of pumpkin pie every day.
Pumpkin pie every day would get old.
All right,
fast.
Okay, I just wanted to.
But again, apple pie. I don't
I'm
know.
Not
if that's
stopping you from ham, but I really think that you.
I think it's legit.
No, I think that you circumvented the spirit of this question.
I think it's legit.
All right. Well, me stuffing and gravy. Do you call it dressing or do you call it stuffing?
Stuffing.
Thank you.
I don't know if that's. I don't know what the regional.
I think it's dressing in the South. Stuffing. Stuffing everywhere else.
Yeah.
And again, you don't have to stuff it in the turkey anymore. I get it's on the side.
Yeah,
but
you
I,
can.
Yeah, that's it. There you go.
I would just, I'm approaching this question very economically.
By the way, I hope that a glimpse into my family's Thanksgiving history explains how I have gotten the name The Big Rig. Thank you. All right. Are we good?
I think so.
I think we've covered all of the bases.
Wait a minute.
Oh, no, we have a giveaway to get to. If you made it through the food discussion and Michael Smith's blatant disregard for the spirit of the question, you are rewarded.
That's
NHL 19 from EA Sports.
Erroneous.
Thank you so much. Not erroneous. Not erroneous.
Erroneous. Congratulations to Robert Shate. Shate? S-C-H-A-T-T-E.
Or Shady.
Or Shady. Slim Shady.
Absolutely.
Maybe. Robert Shady, we'll be reaching out to you.
Not the real Slim Shady, though.
PlayStation 4 copy of NHL 19 coming your way, and the Xbox One winner, NHL 19, Marcus Zhang, will be reaching out to you as well. Congratulations to the two of you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for entering the contest when we had it open. We'll hope to bring you some more giveaways here in the near future, maybe around Christmas.
I just have one thing to say to you. Lock it up. Just lock it up.
Lock it up.
Next time, just with your weird answers to certain questions.
I think it's extremely logical and economical.
I can't wait for, like, what's my favorite part of Christmas? The fireworks! That's what I love!
I've never seen fireworks on Christmas.
Well, then you haven't lived, sir. So congratulations to the real Slim Shady.
Yes.
And Mr. Zhang.
The Thanksgiving food buffet is plentiful. And that question, I think you can pick anything on the traditional buffet.
Fine. Prime rib. Could eat that every day.
I'm sure some people do serve ribs.
They do.
I think we might have
prime
some barbecue
rib, not
at ours.
Ribs.
Well, yeah. Ribs. Prime rib, yeah, sure.
All right. Thank you.
Mac and cheese. I don't consider that a uniquely Thanksgiving food.
See,
but it's certainly a part of the
stuffing is, because you don't have stuffing every day.
But it's certainly a part of the Thanksgiving buffet. I think it's too difficult to relegate a food solely to a single holiday.
You associate turkey with Thanksgiving. Nobody talks about how the president comes out and pardons the Thanksgiving swine.
Well, this one might.
Well. Touche. That'll do it for us for the Web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
That's episode 66 of the Canes Cast. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.